Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Rupa Dadhar Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gogopina Shaimakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale. Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Devi. Gauravani Pracharane. Nirvasesa Sanyavadi Pascha Chade Shatarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Vanchakalpatrupischa Kripasanavyavita Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavyavyo Namo Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's November 12th, 2023, at Govardhan. At the ISKCON Palace in Govardhan. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 2, Text 20. So this is Uddhava speaking about the fact that Krishna is gone. Tataiva Chanye Naraloka Vira.
Tataiva Chanye Naraloka Vira.
Yaha Ve Krishna Mukaravindam. Netrai pivanto nayana viramam.
Netrai pivanto ganam jaram.
Parthastra putra padama purasya.
Parthastra putra padama purasya.
Please chant. Tata.
Tata.
As also.
As also.
Evacha.
Evacha.
And certainly.
And certainly.
Anye.
Anye.
Others,
others.
Naraloka.
Naraloka,
human society,
Viraha,
fighters.
Fighters,
yay,
yay.
Those.
Ahave,
on the battlefield,
on the battlefield.
Of Kurukshetra.
Kurukshetra,
Krishna,
Krishna.
Lord Krishna's,
Krishna.
Mukha Aravindam,
Mukha Aravindam.
Face like a lotus flower,
face like a lotus flower.
Netrai.
Netrai.
With the eyes.
With the eyes.
Pibantaha.
Pibantaha.
While seeing.
While seeing.
Actually, that literally means drinking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, drinking with the eyes. Nayana Abhiramam.
Nayana Abhiramam.
Very pleasing to the eyes.
Very pleasing to the eyes.
Partha.
Partha.
Arjuna.
Arjuna.
Astraputaha.
Astraputaha.
Purified by arrows.
Purified by arrows.
Does that sound like a very nice way to get purified? Padam.
Padam.
Abode.
Abode.
Apahu.
Apahu.
Achieved.
Achieved.
Asya.
Asya.
Of him.
Of him.
Srila Prabhupada's translation. Certainly others who were fighters on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were purified by the onslaught of Arjuna's arrows, and while seeing the lotus-like face of Krishna so pleasing to the eyes, they achieved the abode of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, appears in this world for two missionary purposes, to deliver the faithful and to annihilate the miscreants. But because the Lord is absolute, his two different kinds of actions, although apparently different, are ultimately one and the same. His annihilation of a person like Shishupal is as auspicious as his actions for the protection of the faithful. All the warriors who fought against Arjuna, but who were able to see the lotus-like face of the Lord on the battlefront, achieve the abode of the Lord, exactly as the devotees of the Lord do. The words pleasing to the eyes of the seer are very significant. When the warriors from the other side of the battlefield saw Lord Krishna at the front, they appreciated his beauty, and their dormant instinct of love of God was awakened. Shishupala saw the Lord also, but he saw the Lord as his enemy, and his love was not awakened. Therefore, Shishupala achieved oneness with the Lord by merging in the impersonal glare of his body called the Brahmajyoti. Others who were in the marginal position, being neither friends nor enemies, but slightly in love of Godhead by appreciating the beauty of his face, were at once promoted to the spiritual planets, the Vaikunthas. The Lord's personal abode is called Goloka Vrindavana, and the abodes where his plenary expansions reside are called the Vaikunthas, where the Lord is present as Narayana. Love of Godhead is dormant in every living entity. Is that a point that Srila Prabhupada makes a lot?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like a lot? Like all over the place? Mm-hmm. Okay, just checking about that. We have some people who say that love of God is not dormant in the heart of every living entity.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's in our heart then. It's just like a void or something. Anyway. Not going to talk about that. Maybe I'll talk about that. I'm not sure. Love of God, it is dormant in every living entity, and the entire process of devotional service unto the Lord is meant for awakening this dormant, eternal love of Godhead. So what does the word dormant literally mean? Think of the French Latin.
Which, sleeping?
Sleeping. Yeah. Yes. So the entire process of devotional service unto the Lord is meant for awakening this dormant eternal love of Godhead. But there are degrees of such transcendental awakening. Those whose love of God is awakened to the fullest extent go back to the Goloka Vrindavan planet in the spiritual sky, whereas persons who have just awakened to love of God by accident or association are transferred to the Vaikuntha planets. Essentially, there is no material difference between Goloka and Vaikuntha. But in the Vaikunthas, the Lord is served in unlimited opulence, whereas in Goloka, the Lord is served in natural affection. This love of God is awakened by the association of pure devotees of the Lord. Here the word Partha Ashtraputaha is significant. Those who saw the beautiful face of the Lord on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were purified first by Arjuna when he made his onslaught with arrows. The Lord appeared for the mission of diminishing the burden of the world, and Arjuna was assisting the Lord by fighting on his behalf. Arjuna personally declined to fight, and the whole instruction of the Bhagavad Gita was given to Arjuna to engage him in the fight. As a pure devotee of the Lord, Arjuna agreed to fight in preference to his own decision, and thus Arjuna fought to assist the Lord in his mission of diminishing the burden of the world. All the activities of a pure devotee are executed on behalf of the Lord, because a pure devotee of the Lord has nothing to do for his personal interest. Arjuna's killing was as good as killing by the Lord himself. Now that's quite a statement, isn't it? Because if we look at the qualities of Krishna as given in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, giving salvation to the enemies that he kills is not listed in the first 50 qualities that would also apply to the jiva. Arjuna's killing was as good as killing by the Lord himself. As soon as Arjuna shot an arrow at an enemy, that enemy became purified of all material contaminations and became eligible to be transferred to the spiritual sky. Now, by the way, in case you're thinking that therefore the people on the Kuru side had an advantage, it's also mentioned by Bhishma that everybody who died in the battle. So it wasn't that the people on the Pandava side who died lacked this advantage because they weren't pierced by Arjuna's arrow. So just in case you were feeling bad about that. Those warriors who appreciated the lotus feet of the Lord and saw his face at the front had their dormant love of God awakened, and thus they were transferred at once to Vaikuntha Loka, not to the impersonal state of the Brahmajyoti as was Shishupala. Shishupal died without appreciating the Lord, while others died with appreciation of the Lord. Both were transferred to the spiritual sky, but those who awakened to love of God were transferred to the planets of the transcendental sky. Uddhava seemingly lamented that his own position was less than that of the warriors on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, because they had attained to Vaikuntha, whereas he remained to lament the disappearance of the Lord. So that's just sweet. You follow?
Yes.
That's just his rasa, that he's thinking, I'm less fortunate because I'm... Is he less fortunate?
No.
Not at all. But he's thinking, oh, they have more fortune than me. Tadaiva chande nyarloka vira ya avaye krishna mukara vindam netrai pibanto nayanam biranam partastraputa pata apur asya. Certainly others who were fighters on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were purified by the onslaught of Arjuna's arrows, and while seeing the lotus-like face of Krishna so pleasing to the eyes, they achieve the abode of the Lord. So here we're looking at opportunity and how we respond to that opportunity. And Prabhupada's talking about that different persons responded differently to getting pierced by Arjuna's arrows and seeing Krishna's lotus face, so beautiful that they were drinking his beauty through the eyes. So when Srila Prabhupada was here in Vrindavan in 1972, lecturing on the nectar devotion, he said that Krishna is giving a chance always 24 hours in perception. So we don't always, we're not necessarily seeing every minute of every day, every second of every day, Krishna's lotus face in front of us. So we might not be perceiving that we're being given this chance. But actually, Krishna's giving this chance to everybody all the time in some form. Yeah? Just like we've recently published a book on how to meditate on Krishna in the world. And there's, like Krishna says, I'm the fragrance of the earth. And Prabhupada says, even if you don't read the scriptures, even if you don't have a guru, you can understand God by the fragrance of a flower. So there's evidence everywhere. Prabhupada often makes this sort of point, that even if you're not educated, even if you're not trained, you can see God everywhere. You can see God in the order of the seasons, in the trees, in the artistry of the birds, and so many things. And so Krishna is giving everyone a chance 24 hours imperceptibly. So there's kind of a mystery of the world, that the world is made both for sense gratification and for liberation. And what we're supposed to do is we're supposed to wake up what's dormant. And then we're going to look at the various roles of waking up what's dormant. We have the role of the devotee, in this case Arjuna, but in general the devotee, the role of God, and our own role. So Prabhupada says this is the mystery of the creation, that the creation is designed for us to forget Krishna and to remember him, both. It's like we were saying that Krishna is always there in nature, but the atheists, they use nature as an excuse to forget God. It's quite peculiar to me how anybody can look at nature and say there's no creator, there's no intelligence. I actually find this, I can't wrap my head around it at all. How is this possible? You know, something this simple as a little leaf bulb. I mean, this is extremely simple, yes? I imagine you'd have to be at least a five-year-old human to make this. I doubt that a two-year-old human could make it, and the monkeys around here certainly couldn't make it. Right? I mean, you have to have a certain level of intelligence. And this is, it's so simple compared to a flower, or compared to a little insect, or, you know, if we take very, very simple things in this world, they're far more complex than this. And just like archaeologists, you know, they can dig and they can find, oh, this is evidence of intelligence. But the whole world is evidence of Krishna's intelligence. Krishna's intelligence, Krishna's artistry, Krishna's penchant for individuality. Sometimes I give a whole class, especially to new people, about what can you understand about the nature of God just by looking at the world. And yet people can look at the world and not see God at all. They can think, why is everything perfectly adapted to its environment? Well, that's just some, you know, happened over billions and billions and billions of mistakes. You know, there were over uncountable years and uncountable mistakes, the ones that survived were the ones that were adapted. How do you know they were the ones that adapted? Well, they were the ones that survived. Which ones survived? Well, those were the ones that are adapted. That's what we call a tautology, poor logic. But people see this, and in general, materialistic people don't think about these things at all, one way or the other. Is my speed okay for everybody?
Yes.
Any of you with English as a second, third, fourth language? Is it okay?
Yes.
So generally, people don't even think about it. They just go about their lives without thinking, is there a God? Is he around? Is he manifested? When we were creating the Learn to Read series, so I reviewed the top literacy series from America, United Kingdom, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand. And what one of the two things that jumped out at me was just the absence of God. He was just absent. Story after story after story of life, you know, usually life of some child or sometimes life of animals, or and there was simply no reference to God at all. He was just, you could move through life and never think about religion and never think about the divine and never think about anything higher, and that was perfectly fine. And I remember when I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, the town president's wife, Sri Lekha, we were out distributing books at a mall, she and I, and they were playing some music in the mall, and she looked at me and she said, this is, everything's okay, forget about God. And it's actually unbelievable, but people are perfectly capable of doing this. And in these books, there were sometimes stories about religious festivals. Like I remember there was something about Diwali, but it showed Diwali without any religious anything. People were lighting lamps and eating, you know, regional foods. And that was the Diwali, and Christmas was the Christmas tree and presents, and, you know. And if someone says, oh yes, we're bringing in religion, we're bringing in multicultural religion, but the divine was just gone. So that's the amazing thing, that Krishna is actually all around us. He says he's the sound in ether. Prabhupada says, if you don't want to chant Hare Krishna, you can meditate how Krishna is a sound in ether. That's Krishna. The Bhagavatam says the trees are the hairs on his body. And we're walking among the trees. It's like we're walking on his body. The birds are his artistic sense, you know, the parrots, the peacocks, the pigeons, even, how they fly, how they move, how they make sounds. He's constantly there. I mean, we shouldn't think that, well, okay, I'm not on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and I'm not seeing Arjuna and I'm not seeing Krishna's beautiful face. But we are seeing Krishna's beautiful face constantly. As Prabhupada says, 24 hours, imperceptibly. He's there as our intelligence, as our ability, as our remembrance. He says, I'm the life of all that lives. He's our sense of being alive. Can you feel that? I'm alive. That we have an aliveness. Krishna says, that's him. He says he's the living force or consciousness. We just take it for granted. I'm aware. I'm aware of where my toes are right now. You know, if I have some pain in my body, I'm aware of that. I have awareness. That's Krishna. So we're constantly in his presence, and we're constantly in his amazing presence. But we're not, we just forget about it. Yes? But actually, this love of God and this awareness of God is sleeping in all of us. It's already there. Right? Rupa, Rupa Goswami says, this is not something to be gained from another source. It's already there. So I'm going to dive into difficult waters here. You know, there's this big controversy, which will never be fully solved, by the way. How did the soul become unaware? How did we fall asleep? So some people say, well, we were never aware. We do have somebody who claims to be in our Gaudiya Sampradaya who put out a whole book to say, we have no dormant awareness. And so he asked me if I'd be willing to talk to him for some time. So I said, are you sure? And then I said, well, how are we a person then? What does it mean that we're a person? And after 3 hours, he said, well, we're potentially a person. And I'm like, so what are we now? We're just like nothing. So that's not a very satisfying philosophy. And we can see that dormant love of God, Prabhupada gives us example in the preface of Nectar Devotion, that it's evident even in a tiger. And you see, the monkeys, they have affection for each other. Not always, sometimes they're yelling at each other. But you can see they have affection, isn't it? They're hugging each other, they're grooming each other. Well, they're just monkeys. They're these mice that eat scorpions, really. They're called scorpion mice, you can look it up. One of the things I learned from being a Gurukul teacher for so many years. And they have stable mates. I don't know if they absolutely mate for life, but they have stable mates, and the father and mother really love their children. If an owl carries off one of their children, the father and mother mouse will hug each other and cry. And they're just mice. And they're not nice mice either. They fight with scorpions. They have a strong immunity to scorpion poison. They're heavy-duty creatures. But they have affection. They have affection. As a cheap zoo, we would sometimes take our children to pet shops. Free zoo. And I remember in one of these pet shops, while the kids were looking at the different pets, there was a booklet there on raising hermit crabs. And so, being somewhat bored, I picked up the book and I was reading about raising hermit crabs. And it says, each hermit crab has its own personality. It says, if you have several hermit crabs and you have an obstacle in the tank or whatever, some of them will consistently stop and turn around. Some of them will consistently go around it. Some of them will consistently go over it. And you can tell which hermit crab will act in which way. And they act differently. Yes, I haven't seen it, but there was a big hoopla about some movie about an octopus that became very close with some human who was diving underwater. But love of, that we have dormant love is so obvious. You know, even criminals, I mean, heavy-duty criminals will often love their children. You know, like Nazi war criminals. They often love their own children or their own dog or something like that. It's so obvious that we have love in us. It may be, you know, manifested in some perverted way. I was just recently reading where Srila Prabhupada said that this tendency to find happiness in the happiness of God, which Prabhupada talks about in this purport, how Arjuna gave up his own separate concept of happiness in order to make Krishna happy, which is an idea that's very misunderstood often by beginning devotees. They think it means like repressing your in nature or something like that. But anyway, this tendency to find happiness by giving and happiness by serving, Prabhupada said it's there. It's obvious in the tendency to be charitable, to help others. And I always give this example, you know, in Christian-based countries, Christmas is a big holiday, and the stores make, you know, a huge amount of their money for the year by selling presents that you give to others. Now, let's say they started saying, well, this is a really foolish holiday. Why are you spending all this money? People save all year, right, to spend money giving presents to others. But they might not like your presents, and you might not like what presents they give you. So why don't you take this money and just spend it on yourself? Be much more efficient, wouldn't it? Right? Imagine everybody took the money and they just bought presents for themselves and they wrapped it up and they put it under the tree. And in the morning they opened their presents they had purchased. Would that work? No, it wouldn't work. Why? It's so peculiar. It's illogical. It doesn't make the slightest bit of sense. Why would I spend thousands, these people are spending thousands of dollars buying presents for others and having a gift exchange? Because it's more pleasurable to give. Isn't that, I mean, it's strange, isn't it? It's not logical. And it doesn't make any sense in a mechanistic universe where there's no God. It just doesn't make the slightest bit of sense. I mean, you know, we enjoy cooking for others more than cooking for ourselves, yes?
Yes.
It's always like that. And if you've ever, like, cooked or served a big feast, and maybe you were so absorbed in it there were hardly any preps left for you, and you didn't really care. Right? When I used to be in charge of the Janmashtami serve out in Hillsborough, I told the servers, make your own plates first. Put it aside. Otherwise there'll be no, you know, paneer sabji left for you. But we can get more satisfaction. Yeah, you can get more satisfaction making a surprise party for your friend than having a birthday party for yourself. Because love is dormant in the heart of all living entities. And ultimately, this is love for God. So this question was asked by Sukadeva Goswami. He was very confused when Krishna manifested as the cowherd boys and the calves when Lord Brahma stole them. And then everyone had more affection. The cows had more affection. This is a little side point. So the boys and the calves were exactly identical to the original ones, right? Exactly. But not exactly. There was one way in which they were different. What was different?
It was
a different rasa. There was a different rasa going on because they were actually Krishna. By the way, you can't have two identical jivas. That's why Lord Brahma was so bewildered. I mean, why would Lord Brahma be so bewildered? I'm sure he was familiar with the concept of identical twins. I mean, why would he be so bewildered? Because you can't have two identical jivas who are unique. But there you see that at Sukadeva Goswami, he asked, why did they have more love for the boys and the cows than their own children? He said, this is not normal. Normally, we have more affection for our own children than other people's children. That's what's normal. And Prabhupada gives that as an example all the time of how Krishna is more inclined to his devotees. He said, nobody accuses somebody of having more affection for their own children than for others. What's wrong with you? And Marge Prickett asked this question, rather, Sukadeva Goswami. And Sukadeva Goswami said, well, the reason we love our body and our family is because we love ourself. And the reason we love ourself is that ourself is part of Krishna. He's the self of the self. It's ultimately that we're loving ourself. So this dormant love for God is ultimately love for our big self. Our love for others, our love for ourself, ultimately is because we love Krishna. But it's just, it's not manifest. So how did this happen? So this question is asked three times that I'm aware of in the Bhagavatam. The question is asked directly. How did we fall asleep? I mean, a lot of times people quote indirect evidence, but there's three direct times, once in the second canto, once in the third canto, once in the 11th canto, where the question is asked directly, how is it if the pure soul always has love for God? How is it that this pure soul has become bewildered and doesn't see the Lord anymore? How have they fallen asleep? And the answers given are, well, it's like seeing your head cut off in a dream. Okay, next one. That's it. That's the answer. It's like the moon reflected in water looks like it's moving when it's not. where Krishna's answer to Uddhava is, well, there's no real meaning to being conditioned or being liberated anyway. That's their answer. You can see why it's a controversy, yeah? If that's the answer. How did we forget God? How did we become dormant? How did we fall asleep? Oh, it's like seeing your head cut off in a dream. It's like seeing the reflection of the moon in the water is moving and thinking the moon is moving. Oh, there's really no meaning to this question altogether. That's the answers. And so not being satisfied with such answers, we make up so many theories. We're dreaming. And just like when you're dreaming, to try to understand how it is that you're dreaming when you're dreaming is not possible. Do you follow? When you're sleeping, you cannot understand how you fell asleep. You have to wake up, and once you wake up, you can understand, oh, this is how I fell asleep. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport in Bhagavad Gita that it's not really very important how this happened. He says the Supreme Lord knows how it happened, but this is not, he said, this is really not an important question. Or Prabhupada will talk about when the house is on fire. That's not when you bring in the fire, whatever they're called, the people who investigate arson in the fire department. How did the fire start? You wait till the fire's out, and then you can investigate. So somehow or other, as we say in our translation to the Shikshastika, somehow or other, I fell asleep. My love of God fell asleep, and I'm dreaming. Or one can say that we are in the dream of Mahavishnu. And in this dream, I lose this awareness. Just like sometimes when you're giving a class, you see people in the room that are sleeping. Right? They lose the awareness that they're there. When you're sleeping, you lose the awareness of where you are and what's going on around you. You think you're in some other realm. Yeah, so when we're sleeping, we're not aware that Krishna is always there. Just like there was that reporter that asked Prabhupada, you know, so you're getting dictation from Krishna. Are you seeing Krishna? And Rameshwar butts in and says, yes, Krishna's in the heart. And Prabhupada says, no, I'm seeing Krishna face to face all the time. That just reminds me when we met Prabhupada in New York when he came in 75. Really funny that I think it's labeled as Philadelphia, but it's not. It's New York. And Prabhupada arrived in the airport. And one reporter kept pressing Prabhupada, how old were you when you became Krishna conscious? And Prabhupada said, that I cannot say from the age. And the reporter kept pressing, how old when you became enlightened? Prabhupada said, maybe four. After for a long time just saying, I can't give an age. You know. And actually to see that there's Krishna, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilotanina Santasa Daiva Radiya Shivalokaranti and Shama Sundarama Chintagunaswagam. Just like when Mahaprabhu was speaking to Ramananda Roy, and you know, Ramananda Roy says, oh, I see you're Krishna. And he says, oh, you're a pure devotee, you always see Krishna. And so this is to wake up. Now how do we wake up? That's the big question. The big question isn't how did I fall asleep? The big question is, how do I wake up? We have evidence that I have an awakened state that's different in all the examples I gave that love of God is dormant. You follow? So we can see that. We can see my natural state is different. How I'm trying to love in this world doesn't work out very well. Yeah? I'm trying to love myself thinking on this body, or I'm trying to love my family, or I'm trying to love my country, or I'm trying to love the poor people, or I'm trying to love my dog. And it doesn't work. I'm not satisfied, and the object of my love is not satisfied. But I can see that I have this tendency to love. So I can see there's something different than my sleeping state. And how do I wake up from it? So here we have three things that Prabhupada's talking about in this purport. The role of the devotee, the role of the Lord, and our role. And each of them has to be operative. So first of all, we'll take the role of the Lord. Well, again, he's always there. He's always there in everything. And the Lord makes quite a bit of effort to ensure that we are told that he's always there. Right? Srila Prabhupada refers to a Gita verse in this purport without quoting it. Does anybody remember? I didn't point it out when I read it, so I was hoping somebody would notice. The Prabhupada made a reference in this purport to a Bhagavad Gita verse. He didn't give the verse number, he didn't quote the verse. Parichunaya sadhanam vinashaya tadushkutam dharma stamstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge, that he comes to deliver the pious and to annihilate the misdemeanors. And right after that, Prabhupada said that these two are identical, that whether Krishna is saving the pious or annihilating the miscreants. So Krishna also comes personally over and over and over and over and over and over and over, as many incarnations as the waves in the ocean. So he gives us, he's there in nature all around us, which he gives instructions in the Shastra, how we can see him in nature. He's constantly incarnating. He's there in all the religions of the world, all the bona fide religions of the world. There's some talk of God, some understanding of God, some scriptures that describe God. So he's constantly, over and over and over and over again, coming before us and saying, here I am, here I am, here I am, here I am. Yes? He's constantly doing that. He doesn't leave us at any time bereft of his presence in one way or another. But he's neutral. Otherwise we wouldn't have free will. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, years ago I met one Indian gentleman who says, yes, I read the Bhagavad Gita every day. I have a favorite verse, and I live my whole life by this verse. I said, oh, what is that verse? My dear Arjuna, now you can do whatever you like. So Krishna is neutral. I mean, he's not biased. He says, I don't have dvesha, I don't have enmity for anyone. Not priya, not dvesha. I don't have, no one's dear to me, no one's my enemy. And one sense, suridam sarvabhutanam, he's everyone's friend, but he's neutral. He's not going to force us. Prabhupada said this, that's not love. Love isn't, you know, love that, like Ravana's idea of love, where Ravana goes to Sita and he says, if you won't love me, I'll have my cooks cut you up and I'll eat you for breakfast. And I'm thinking, that wouldn't really induce me to love you, you know. Just doesn't make it for me, you know. Hare Krishna. So that's not love. And Krishna doesn't want, you know, and it's an unfortunate thing that so many religions, they present God something like that, isn't it? Yeah. You know, it's really, I find it not just sad, but a tragedy. Just absolute tragedy. You know, we were listening to this Muslim in Bahrain give us a synopsis of Islam. And she was like, you know, when you die, you go to the gates and they have three questions. Who's God? Who's the prophet? And how do you live your life? And depending on how you answer those questions depends on whether you're eternally enjoying in heaven or whether you burn in a lake of fire forever. I'm like, whoa, you know. My teachers weren't that mean. Imagine parents like that. You'd be arrested. You'd be jailed. You know, if you don't obey me right now, then I'm going to torture you for eternity. So this is what's being taught. It's really a shame. You know that God is trying to force us. That He gives us one life, and in this life, you know, it's force. If you don't believe in me, if you don't surrender to me, if you don't love me, I'm going to punish you forever. And it's not like that. I always like to give the example in the fifth canto, how there's the subterranean heavenly planets for the demons. And Rupa Goswami gives this example that Krishna is dependable. And he says, the demons know if I follow the rules, Krishna won't bother me. You know, if you're a good moral demon, you get to go to the subterranean heavens. Krishna's not envious. Like, you can be an atheist. But if you follow the proper rules and you're a moral person, you follow the laws of karma, there's a heaven for you. And it's a really nice heaven. There's no theists there. Nobody will want knock on your door trying to sell you a religious book. And you don't even see the passing of time. You know, a lot of the indicators of the presence of God in nature are gone. It's our artificial lights, you know, like Las Vegas at night. And you can just... Krishna's not envious at this point. He's neutral. So Krishna's not going to push himself in our face. I'm here! It's more like, I'm here. And Vishnu Chagavati Thakur brings this up. He says, how will anybody awaken their bhakti when God is neutral? Well, the devotees are not neutral. Therefore, Prabhupada says, the devotees of the Lord are more merciful than the Lord. The devotees will get in your face and say, there's a God! He's over there going, I'm here. The devotees will give out prasadam. They'll give out the holy name. They'll give out books. They'll tell you. You can see the hair of God in the clouds and the hair of God in the trees and the artistry of God in the birds, and you can come to our temple and you can actually see God's personal form, and you can read about him in the Bhagavatam, and you can look, and here's God, and here's God, and here's God. And without the devotees, practically speaking, there's no hope. Practically speaking, you could say. Yes, Krishna can become the guru of someone, but generally speaking, without the devotees, there's no one. And the devotees are willing to take risks, because when you wake up sleeping people, they may not always appreciate it. I'm sure we've all had that experience. You know, time to get up. Where's the snooze button? What time is it anyway? There's some nice prasad. So we risk. I mean, it's a heavy risk. Sometimes you may get killed for trying to wake people up. It happens. But we also have our role. Like Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati says, you know, you throw the rope down in the well to save somebody, they have to grab the rope. So how interesting in this purport where Prabhupada's saying that those who got purified by Arjuna's arrows and saw the beauty of the Lord and were attracted, their dormant love for Krishna awakened. And even though it was a slight awakening, it was enough to bring them to Vaikuntha. You know, Prabhupada's statement about the difference between Vaikuntha and Goloka here is a general statement. It's not an absolute one, because there are living entities that their ultimate expression of love of God is in Vaikuntha. Like Bhishma, for example. But in Vaikuntha, so many of the residents are in Shantaras. They're not doing active service. They're just appreciating. Oh, I live in the kingdom of God. He's wonderful. It's personal, but it's peaceful. So Prabhupada's talking here about degrees, and that's a fact. There are degrees, but also there's so many statements that everyone goes to the place that is best for them. So there are some beings who can go from Vaikuntha to Goloka. Of course, we have Gopakumar, and Prabhupada writes that in Nectar Devotion, that Vaikuntha may not be the final destination. But for some people, they're satisfied. For some jivas, many, many, their ultimate expression is in Vaikuntha. But then Prabhupada says there were others who saw Krishna and Arjuna, and they didn't respond with love. And they went to the Brahmajyoti. So that's up to us. I mean, I think about like Kaliya. Of course, he did become a devotee. But Kaliya sees Krishna and he says, oh, he's so beautiful, I want to kill him. I mean, perhaps a better example is Kaliyavana. Kaliyavana saw Krishna and he says, he's the one that I heard about. Let me kill him. And he wasn't even killed by Krishna. We don't even hear that he like went to the Brahmajyoti. So it's entirely possible to see God and say, blech, I don't like him. I want to kill him. I don't want to serve him. That's entirely possible because we have free will. So sometimes, at least I have thought this, so perhaps some of you have thought this as well. Well, my lack of advancement in Krishna consciousness is Krishna's fault. If he was just more perceivable, If he would just manifest more in his holy name, if he would just manifest more in the deity, if he would just manifest more in the trees and the clouds, then of course I would fall in love with him and I wouldn't have any problems. It's not my problem, it's his problem that he's not manifesting enough. I've definitely thought this way. But Krishna's always there. It's how much do I choose to allow myself to wake up? How much do I choose to allow my false ego to drop away? What are we doing instead of waking up? We're holding on, right? Have you ever really liked a dream and you didn't want to wake up? And that's kind of what we're doing. But this is not a pleasant dream, my dear friends. It really isn't. I mean, it has its pleasant moments. It does, absolutely. You know, it definitely has its pleasant moments. Like eating cheesecake at the MBT or something, you know. It has its ups. But altogether, it's not a very pleasant dream. It really isn't. And if you think it is when you're young, as you get older, you find this really... You know, you've got this falling apart car that you're in. Like, you know, you go on these old rickshaws and they bump at every bump. And the body becomes like that. And we get sick. And then we have so many mental anxieties and so many interpersonal problems and mosquitoes. And it's not a very nice dream. But we're holding on to this, you know. I am this. I am this identity. I am a New York American woman. That's who I am. And I have this good quality. I've got these accomplishments, and that's my identity, and I'm going to hold on to it. Wake up! No! What will happen to me? I'll disappear. I won't exist anymore. So that's the problem. The problem is how much do we want to respond? How much are we willing? And how much do we want to respond is how much are we willing to let go of our false identity and our false idea of Ishwara Hamahambogi Siddhanta. How am I going to be happy in this world? And then depending also on how much we allow our dormant love to awaken and to what extent, then we do go to different destinations, right? Actually, this was the question that prompted the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Uttara asked Maharaj Purkhit, does everyone go to the same place? Right, and he tells this whole wonderful story of the different destinations, different types of devotees and different types of destinations. And of course, Sri Rupa Goswami explains this so wonderfully in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So we can go to different spiritual destinations depending on our degree of waking up, but also depending on our flavor of waking up. Oh, Krishna, I want to love you in this way. Krishna, I want to love you in this way. Krishna, and that becomes our dormant love of God is not just love. It's a specific love. I want to love you as this. I want to love you as this. And that. Lord Brahma has this wonderful verse in prayers to the creative energy, prayers for creative energy, that the Lord manifest in whatever form we want to see him. So not only will the Lord manifest, but as we awaken our dormant love, he'll manifest in a very, very personal way. And Srila Sanatana Goswami says in a commentary in the 13th chapter of the 10th canto that each of us is going to have an attraction to a particular quality of the Lord. We're going to have a particular rasa with the Lord that only we have. So this is the purpose of the Hare Krishna movement, to awaken our dormant love. For this we have one of the greatest devotees ever, Srila Prabhupada. And we have the supreme form of the Lord as Krishna, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So now it becomes us to respond. So thank you very much. Thank you for this opportunity, in this wonderful place, at this wonderful time. So do we have time for questions, or should we just end? Yes?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I want her to get your question.
Yes.
There's a mic.
There is a mic.
Mm. Oh, can I get that? Thank you for your wonderful class. I just had a question regarding something that comes up in the first canto. I think it's either the first, second, or third verse of the first chapter, and Prabhupada's talking about the different rasas, and how rasas can only be exchanged between man and man, not animal and man. But simultaneously, we see people have so much affection for the dogs in America. You're mentioning this example of the octopus and the man. So what does Prabhupada mean when he's saying that?
So it's not actually an exchange, because the understanding is not the same on both sides. So it's not a real exchange. You know, in the spiritual world, the exchanges between the trees and the animals and Krishna and the devotees, they're all fully conscious. Whereas, you know, when you're loving your dog, your dog is not loving you the way you think your dog is loving you. You're projecting something onto your dog. I was just actually reading in Chaitanya Charitamrita yesterday, when Prabhupada was talking about how love, there has to be two. There has to be some understanding. You know, so the love of the other species, it's different. That's my understanding of that. I mean, people ask about that from time to time. Vaisheshu, would you have something you'd like to add to that?
I ask about it a lot, because people are so attached to animals, and the animals seem to be a lot friendlier than humans. And I get it a lot, and I'm sure you do too, just in public preaching, that people say, well, what about animals? Can they be enlightened also? Of course we have, you know, Bharat as a deer and Gajendra and so forth. But my comment is, it's not a resolution of the issue so far, I liked your answer, but just that people are super sensitive about it. If you categorically count animals out of the equation, especially people's experience of how much the dog loves them, it's easy to turn off the Western audience really fast.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, I get it. You guys don't understand spirituality.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I used to regularly write columns for Back to Godhead on education. And I wrote one about being detached from your children. That got practically no negative feedback. I wrote one about being detached from pets. I was attacked. I was absolutely attacked. And I really thought it was a balanced article. Like, if you actually read it. But yeah, I never got as attacked as that article. It was about children keeping pets. And I was talking about being, you know, not getting so attached that you become a dog or a cat. But wow, that was the amount of hate mail that came in to Back to God. Did you have any other comment, Prabhu, you'd like to make on this verse in general?
Well, I mean, the class is fantastic. There's just a lifetime of points here. I really appreciated your approach to the very succinct but helpful approach to the controversial issue. As succinct, as appropriately succinct, but it left satisfied, especially the aspect of when you're sleeping, you can't understand how you went to sleep, when you're sleeping dreaming.
Yeah.
And that's one of the main points in the issue, is that you have to be at a higher perspective in order to understand in the first place. And as Mukunda Dutta probably pointed out a verse to me in the Bhagavatam about how people argue about issues about which they have not had realization.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a form, Krishna says, it's him speaking to Uddhava in the 11th canto, that of ignoring Krishna. It's another way to ignore Krishna is to argue endlessly about issues that you haven't realized yourself. I could make more specific points. I wrote them all down, but I thought it was fantastic. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Over here to the ashram.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much for the class. Really profound and actually really deep class, because it's touching on kind of the essence of why we're here. What actually is liberation? It's a question of what actually is liberation, because on one level we hear all the time, and actually I was really appreciating this because Maharaj was talking in the reading the other day about this play he watched, and all these angelic beings get, they're very beautiful, they get put into a cage, and they're trying to get out of the cage, and he felt very moved by this, because we all ultimately understand that we're eternal by nature. Actually, who we are is eternal and spiritual and pure. And sometimes we can feel that, but it seems very strange to me that because we're struggling so hard on the spiritual path to realize that we already are spiritual, or that we're already Krishna conscious. And it's also pretty amazing to me that when people first become devotees, I guess you could say there's like a honeymoon effect. And then people will get the full experience of really elevated states of Krishna consciousness. I don't know, I'm pretty sure a lot of people do, at least. You can see that new bhaktas are so ecstatic. But it's true, you can get amazing experiences of Krishna where this natural nectarian love is just pouring from your heart. And you've not practiced anything. You just came to the temple, you just took prasad, you just met the devotees. So how is it that you're having this experience? It's like, it's already there, it's already within you. It's not like anything that you're manufacturing or forcing. But then somehow later, you know, where did it go? It's there and it's not there. And it's a total mystery how it is that if we're already liberated, we're striving so hard to get the liberation. Obviously this is the biggest question in spiritual life.
I can try to address this a little
Maharaj
bit.
Maharaj wants to say anything.
This honeymoon is noticed in every faith, that when people take up religion, C.S. Lewis writes about this in Screwtape, that in the beginning there is easy conquest over temptation and this incredible sweetness. And I can give several reasons for this. Ravindasri Prabhu talks about how in the beginning we're generally inoffensive. We're just simple and we're innocent. It is possible to go from there directly to Baba, according to Srila Rupa Goswami. What you experience in the beginning is actually a shadow or a reflection of Baba. In the association of devotees, or at a holy place, or Srila Rupa Goswami says at a festival. And he notes, and Srila Prabhupada also notes in Nectar Devotion, that it's possible for that shadow or reflection to very quickly turn into Baba. Bhanuswami talks about this. He says you don't really need to go through all the stages. But two interesting things happen. I think one on our part and one on Krishna's part. On our part, there's a fear also. Like in this purport, Prabhupada talks about how Arjuna put aside his own desires to serve the desires of the Lord. And that sounds very frightening to most of us. We've had experience in this world where I put aside my desires for someone else and I get exploited. Yes, we've all had that experience. It's frightening. We're afraid of our own self. Like it says, the demons are envious of themselves. We're actually envious of ourselves. We're afraid of who we are. We don't really want to be a servant. We're afraid of being a servant. We're afraid that I'll lose my identity. I'll lose my power. I'll lose my autonomy. I'll lose my agency. We're afraid. I mean, I've seen this happen many times, but one particular discussion I had with a devotee who had, he'd done something, a minor foolish thing, wasn't a major foolish thing, but minor foolish thing, common thing. And devotees were super critical of him. He was the temple president, super, super critical of him, and for doing this thing. And he became very bitter. And in his bitterness, he was not a very pleasant person to be around. So I was giving class in that temple, and in the verse of purport, it said specifically that we should love everyone, that we should be kind to everyone, and we should love everyone. So I said that. And he was cooking in the kitchen. He barges in the temple room, and he says, "Why are you saying we should love everyone?" I said, "Because it's right here in the purport. What do you want me to do?" Anyway, so he asked me to come to his office. I came to his office, and I said, "Prabhu, I wasn't saying that you should love everyone. I was saying that everyone should love you." And when I said that, it was as if, you know, on a very dark, cloudy day, and all of a sudden the sun comes out? Yeah? It would look like that. I mean, actually, his whole demeanor just... All of a his features softened and he brightened and he smiled. It lasted for 30 seconds and then like that, like the clouds came back. It was so dramatic, but I've seen this many times. And I've seen it in myself, where we get this little glimpse and then we're afraid. You follow? So part of it is that. Part of it is that we're afraid. And if we weren't afraid, then we could make progress very quickly. Prabhupada said, becoming Krishna conscious, we can do in a moment. And what we're struggling with is we're struggling with faith that it'll be okay. That if I surrender, it'll be okay. It'll be all right. It'll be nice. It'll be liberating. It'll be joyful. It's not really going to hurt. Yes, it hurts. It hurts in a moment to let go of that anartha and that pride. But ultimately, so that's one way I explain. Another way I explain it is from Krishna's point of view. So let's say that you know you're married, and you find out that your spouse has had 50 affairs. Right? So you throw them out of the house, and then they come back. I'm back. I'd like to restore the relationship. So let's say it's a lady with a cheating man, though it can go either way, obviously. And she'd say, I'm so happy you're back. Thank you for coming back. Is she going to let you in the house? What do you think?
No.
No. She might come to the door. I'm so happy you're back. But I don't know if I can trust you yet. Satchinanda Maharaj talks about this, how we often ask, can I trust God? But we're not asking, can he trust me? No, I'm really serious. I'm going to change my ways. I can see how much I hurt you. I can see how much I hurt myself. I want to restore the relationship. Okay. That's great. And so there's this initial, that's great. And there's an initial welcoming. And then there's, well, if you're really serious, there's some things I'd like you to do. Does that make sense? And then to what extent do we do them? We've got kind of a list. This is the things you should do. Right? This is what you should do. How seriously do we do them? How often do we go, okay, I'm going to do this. Hey, Maya. Okay, I'm doing this. Hey, Maya. Is that all right? So I see it both ways. Both that it's our own fear of giving up our false ego, and it's Krishna seeing, are we serious? Prabhupada talks about this a lot. The Krishna and the Guru, they want to see, are you actually serious? Okay, so we should end now?
Yes.
Thank you very much. There's this nice sloka, which I'll learn the Sanskrit of someday, that whatever's good here comes from my spiritual master and all of the great devotees. Whatever bad here was mine, and please take the good and ignore the bad. Hare Krishna.
Jai!